We're doing the story of Esther. Achashverosh was very upset because here he was trying to show his subjects that he was king by his own rights. He doesn't need Vashti to attain the throne, even though Vashti was of royal blood. And he basically jumped to the throne in the middle of a war when there was a vacancy. And he spent 3 years trying to pump home the message that he's the king. And now, after a celebration of 180 days, we discussed the 6 months that they believed were the forces of darkness, the forces of light, why he made the party then. And now he's made a seven-day celebration for the Jews and non-Jews of Shushan. And on the seventh day, where his big plan, he's going to show everyone that God is no longer with the Jews. And he's going to lead the Jews to promiscuity. His wife Vashti suddenly spoils the party. And she says, "Fool, you can't handle your wine." And now he's really upset. He's upset externally because he has to make a show. And deep down inside, he's doubly upset. He's got a terrible contradiction on his insides. On the one hand, she's dead. She deserves to be killed. And his whole plan was foiled to some degree. On the other hand, he doesn't want to kill her. And he's not sure how to get out of it. So the first step is he says to his advisors, you know, this has to be placed before a special court. And he's hoping that special court will understand his allusions, his little insinuations that he doesn't want her dead. But what's going to happen now is that Memuchan is going to speak up. Who is Memuchan? Guys, who is Memuchan? Haman. Okay, so I just need to know if you know that. The basic madrash that everyone knows is that Memuchan is Haman, and he stepped up to the plate first, and he spoke in front of all his elders. He's listed last, but that's the way a fool works. He speaks up first, and so he's going to express his opinion.
Why is he called by a different name?
That's a good question. Why is he called by a different name? So one interpretation says that Memuchan means he who was prepared. And that the Megillah is giving him a nickname because he was prepared for something, we know, for the gallows. Like it says, Haman came to ask the king to hang Mordechai on the tree that he prepared him. Who's the him? Our tradition is he prepared it for himself. He didn't realize he was preparing for himself. But the Megillah purposely added the word him, lo, asher hechin, lo. Our sages say, what does it mean? Lo latzmo hechin. He really prepared it for himself. He didn't know it yet. So here, that's one interpretation, that the Megillah calls him Memuchan because he was prepared for the gallows, for what we're yet to see. Okay. This goes back to a broader concept we've discussed already, that names in Tanakh reflect meaning. They don't necessarily reflect the person's name. Right? You all know Yekutiel isn't called Yekutiel. Avigdor isn't called Avigdor. Who's Avigdor? Right, Moshe Rabbeinu. Where in Torah is he called Avigdor? He's called by Batya's name. That Pharaoh's daughter named him Moshe. That wasn't the name his parents called him, but the Torah adopts that name to tell us something. We discussed Elchanan, right? Who's Elchanan?
David.
David, right. And yet he's never called Elchanan. His father called him Elchanan. But throughout the Tanakh he's called David because David reflects something. We discussed Yedidia. Who's Yedidia? Shlomo HaMelech. And he goes by the name Shlomo. We see this throughout Tanakh. The Tanakh chooses names that reflect. Oh, in our Megillah, Hadassah, what's her real name? Hadassah, what does the Megillah call her? Esther, because Esther reflects the concept she's going to promote, the revelation of the hiddenness of Hashem. So, okay, Achashverosh's name isn't Achashverosh, right? Mordechai's name isn't Mordechai. Okay, so throughout Tanakh, when we see names, the names reflect the meaning that the storyline is promoting. So that's we have to be prepared. So Memuchan isn't Memuchan. We just went with Alex, mentioned the well-known Medrash, that Memuchan is Haman. So if you guys didn't know that before, we'll stick to that. Did you know that before?
I know.
You didn't know that before, so we'll leave that at that. Okay, and one day, when you grow a little bit older than you are today, so then you have to address the Medrash that says that Memuchan was Daniel. But that's not for tonight. For tonight, okay, Let's stick with Memuchan being Haman, and that's the Medrash that kids learn first. They spend 8 or 10 years learning that Memuchan is Haman. After 8 or 10 years, they encounter the Tosus that quotes the Medrash that Memuchan was Daniel, which leads to a whole different discussion.
Wait, the Daniel that we're learning about?
Oh, yeah, because Daniel had a mean wife.
Ooh, how do you know so much?
Seems both.
Seems that ordinarily that was the name, that was also a name used in their lifetime, but there are exceptions. I didn't want to go that route yet. For now, let's stick with Memuchan being Haman. Okay, so he gives this brilliant piece of advice. They're all drunk. Now, first, Ahasuerus goes to the Jews and says, okay, guys, give me some advice. And the Jews say to themselves, what are we going to do? If we tell him to kill her, well, tomorrow he'll be sober and he'll kill us. If we tell him to leave her, well, she deserves to be killed. She shamed him publicly. So they said to him, we've been exiled. And once a person's exiled, they don't have such good advice. Ever since we're exiled, we don't rule in questions that involve capital punishment. They're basically answering his question. We don't rule in questions that involve capital punishment. You got to ask one of our neighbors, the Moabites, the Ammonites. They've been sitting there pleasantly. They haven't been exiled. They'll be able to answer you. So he ends up with his counsel, and the youngest one speaks up first. Now, let's pause for 1 second. You guys are going to have this experience where you're on a staff meeting, a board meeting, and you're the new guy on the block. You're going to have a situation where your boss calls you into the office and you're the new guy on the block. Remember this. Hedyot kofetz berosh. The fool speaks up first. You got to remember that most of what you have to say, you should be quiet. Most often, listen, learn. There's so much you don't understand. I mentioned a week or two ago that for many years I was asking Rav Bigun, why don't we have tests at Machon Meir? So today I understand why we don't have tests at Machon Meir. But the first years I was here, I couldn't understand it. I said, let the guys understand. There's a curriculum, there's a certain amount you have to cover. And Rav Bigun always said, that's not the way it works. The tshuva process is all-encompassing, and sometimes a person's growing in his connection with the concept that there is a God. You can't go testing him on the laws of Shabbos. And who says that the guy who finished the laws of Shabbos is ahead of the other guy? Maybe the other guy's ahead, because he worked super hard on understanding things and connecting to things. You can't measure tshuva, so there's no tests. You can't work with a curriculum, because it's very personal growth. So I heard all of this. And I still didn't understand. Years later, I started understanding. So I'm saying you enter a system, you have questions, you have comments. Remember Memuchan. Memuchan jumped and spoke up first. That doesn't mean you can't say anything, but gauge your words. Everyone around you has more experience. They've been here for longer. And even though you think your ideas are the best, wait. So, Hedyot kofetz berosh. Memuchan jumps up first. Even though he's the youngest, he has least seniority, he has least experience, and he says what she did was hurtful to all the people in your capital. Because when all the women hear, with that, they'll all look down at their husbands, and they'll say, look at that, Ahasuerus asked Vashti to come, and she didn't. And then all the women will tell the husbands, hey, go fly a kite, I do what I want. So if you want to really show that you're in control, so then you got to write it down in the laws of Persia and Mede. And now the laws of Persia and Mede could never be changed. We discussed this earlier. You could never undo a Persian Mede law. So write down that because she wouldn't come when the king summoned her, so her throne was given to someone else. Notice it doesn't say have her executed. It doesn't say it in the Megillah. Our tradition is that he had her executed. And then everyone will hear it, and then all the women will respect their husbands. Even the smallest husband will get respect. Now that's a great idea, because within marriage, what do most husbands spend their time being frustrated with? That there's no respect. You don't respect me, you don't appreciate me, you don't value me. So in truth, Memuchan touched on a sore point that he had a very good point. If you can get all the husbands to have their wives respect them, you'll be the most loved king in the world. That's true, but the king's edict is not what's going to do it. We discussed many times that the Puritans had a law that if a wife spoke in a way that bothered her husband, he could have her put in a stock in the center of town with her tongue sticking out and a clip on her tongue where she couldn't put it in her mouth. That was a way to shame her, to publicize the fact that she spoke in a way that bothered her husband. Did it work? I'm saying obviously it was used if it's recorded in the history books, but I doubt it worked. Yes?
So they didn't really understand Lashon Hara.
Right. So when they're all in a drunken stupor, Memuchan's idea makes perfect sense. They execute Vashti, and they send letters throughout the capital in all languages. Hear ye, the king has hereby declared that the man is the one that runs the house. And the letters come. You have to remember, in those day, in that day and age, something that was pretty common up until 100 years ago, if a woman misspoke, her husband would smack her. There was no two ways about it. There was no such thing as spousal abuse. Look at the United States. Look at the United States. In the United States, a woman couldn't own land, couldn't take her husband to court 150 years ago. I mean, it's not so long ago. So the guy could do whatever he wanted. And if he would divorce her, she was stuck. No land, no nothing. She was out on the streets. So in those days, the man really, he mentioned the rule of thumb. You guys...
Legal to beat your wife, the stick no wider than your thumb.
Yeah, you heard that? Used to be legal to beat your wife so long as the stick wasn't wider than your thumb. That was the rule of thumb, right? Yeah. That was the rule of thumb. So in Judaism, that's prohibited. But around the world, it was accepted. So they all looked at this and said, oh, Achashverosh is going to tell my wife to talk properly? I got a stick for that. They looked at it and they said, what a crazy king.
Yeah, I got a stick.
Yeah.
Can't
I'm serious.
Can't you beat your wife over the matter of a mitzvah?
No. You're never allowed to beat your wife. And if you think the Rambam says differently, then you have to reread the Rambam. I know that people quote the Rambam differently, but that's not what the Rambam say. The Rambam says that any Jew who sees another Jew transgressing can try to ensure that that Jew observes the mitzvah. Now that can be the wife beating the husband or the husband beating the wife. The Rambam means you have to go as far as, technically, a person has to be willing to go as far as blows. That's assuming it will be productive. That's assuming you mean it for the sake of heaven. And it's not specifically husband to wife. The same would be true wife to husband. And the same would be true any Jew to his fellow Jew. And obviously the Rambam didn't mean we should be picking up sticks and saying, keep Shabbos or else. The Rambam was using a term. He said, yes, you have to feel responsible to that degree. Okay, we're up to the second chapter. Achashverosh calms down, he's sober, and he wakes up and he looks up in bed. And above his bed, he had a statue of Vashti. So he looks at the statue, and then he looks for Vashti. And there's no Vashti. So he starts looking around the house. She's nowhere to be found. He asks the servant, where's Vashti? And they tell him, you had her hung. And he says, why? And they say, well, you summoned her to come without clothing. And she refused. She said that it's a bad move. Either way, you lose. Achashverosh says she was right. What was I thinking? They tell him, well, you were drunk. And he had her killed when you were drunk. So Achashverosh is very upset. And he basically fires his consultant. Somehow Haman gets back in. And he's not sure what to do. So the lads that were around the palace, they say, let's just do a pageant. Every mayor knows who the beautiful women in his town are. You see what type of mayors they were. And you just summon all the beautiful girls to town. And then you decide who you want. So Achshverosh likes the idea. He's going to spend 3 years where every night he sleeps with a different girl. Now, everyone knows he's going to end up with only one. He's not going to end up with more than one. So anyone who had an ounce of brains hid their daughters. Who'd want the king to to capture his daughter. The girl gets stuck in a harem. She's got nothing to do her whole life but to sit there in a bath with perfume so that if Ahasuerus chooses, he could have her for the night. So that was the lot of many women. Now, at this time, we have a man named Mordechai. Mordechai has come in from Jerusalem because he realizes that if he's going to do anything to get the temple rebuilt, he has to work in politics. So he's come into Shushan to see what he can do. Now, Mordechai has a history. Did you guys learn about Mordechai's history as a general? Yes?
No.
In a nutshell, he was a general together with Haman in the army, and Haman didn't ration his food. He ran out of food. They were both on the same side. There were two generals. And then Haman came to Mordechai and said, give me food for my men. And Mordechai said, no, I got to keep my food for my men. And Haman says, but we're in the same army. And Mordechai says, you should have rationed your food. We both were left with the same amount of food. You weren't a good general. You didn't ration your food. There's nothing to talk about. And Haman says, we're going to die. And Mordechai says, yep. Haman says, but you got to give me some food. My men. Mordechai says, no, I don't. I got to save my food for my men. And Haman says, you know what? I'll pay you. And he keeps upping the ante, and Mordechai keeps refusing. And finally, Haman says, look, if I'm going to have to die, I'm willing to sell myself as a servant to you. And that Mordechai agrees to. And then Mordechai has a shoe. They don't have any paper out there. So Haman carves into Mordechai's shoe that he sells himself to be Mordechai's servant. And he is hereby Mordechai's servant. And with that, Mordechai feeds Haman and his men. Mordechai is never going to cash in on that. Haman is going to make all this wealth, and when Haman's going to tell everyone to bow down to him, so Mordechai is just going to show him the shoe. Hey, buddy, remember who's boss. And that's why Haman has it in for Mordechai. Now, Mordechai is described as a descendant of Kish. Now, Kish was the father of King Saul, so we're skipping many generations here. But Mordechai takes on the task to finish off what King Saul didn't, right? You remember when King Saul captured Amalek, he left behind Agog, and that's why Haman is always called Ha-Agogi, the descendant of Agog, because the Megillah is showing us how the two will match off again. They had the first match off between Saul and Agog, and there Saul had mercy on Agog, and now they're going to pair off again. So Mordechai takes his niece Hadassah. Hadassah lost her father in utero. When her mother was pregnant, her father died. And then in childbirth, her mother died, so she was left a baby without anything. This was during the time of the exile, 75 years earlier, as the Jews were being exiled. So there's this baby left to die. And there were two Jews who were given royal privileges. Jeremiah was told, you can do whatever you want, the king isn't going to touch you. And Mordechai. The king said to Mordechai, I respect you, I value you, I see you're a sage. And so Mordechai takes this little girl, the baby girl, Hadassah, and he takes her into his house. Now, he's got no milk for her. So we have a tradition that he developed like a woman and fed her. All the years I skipped this medrash because it seemed so weird to me. A man develops like a woman. And then this year, someone sent me an article that describes how in undernourished countries, the men develop more progesterone because they're famished. And under situations of duress, it's very, very common that men will develop like women and develop milk and be able to feed their babies. So you guys can look it up online. We're all connected today. You can look it up. In situations of malnutrition, it's very common that men will develop like women and be able to feed the babies. So then I said, okay, now I understand Chazal. All the years I read this Gemara, and I wondered, what do they mean? You know, it seems so miraculous. But if modern science is saying that it happens, so then we could take it at face value. You don't have to look for a deeper meaning. So Mordechai feeds Hadassah, and then she grows up, and she tells Mordechai she wants to marry him. Now, there's a huge difference between them. Mordechai is very old. Mordechai is at least 30 years older than Hadassah.
Who's Hadassah?
Esther. Later, she's also going to be called Esther, yeah. So, okay, he brings her up, and then she wants to marry him, and he agrees. And that's what Chazal say. He took her levas. He took her as a daughter. Our sages added tradition. It means lebayis. She was his house. She was his wife. Now, when the girls were summoned, so he hid her. But they came searching in all the houses. They found her. And they took her forcibly to the harem under Haggai. And Esther's not interested in anything. But Haggai likes her. She's a nice girl. All these other brats are telling them, give me this and give me that. And Esther doesn't want anything. Now, every girl was given servants. Esther was in this harem where she had no concept of day and night. Think about it. You're sitting in a closed bath for 6 months. 12 months. 6 months in this bath, 6 months in that bath. You're spending your whole time preparing your body for this creature called Ahasuerus.
I thought they didn't want to be chosen.
They didn't, but they didn't have a choice. They were under...
They were fighting over things, like, give me this and give me that.
Ah, once they were there. So, I want this and I want that. And Esther wasn't interested in all that. But in order to keep track of the days, she'd have a different servant coming in every day. And common practice all the way in the days of the Tanakh, all the way in the days of Bereishis, was also that as a master, you changed a servant's name. So when she gave names to the servants, she gave, let's say, day one, she called him Chama, the son. She called the servant for the day one son, because the son was created on Sunday. Each day she gave a name that corresponded to that day of creation, and that way she would keep track of the days, because otherwise you couldn't know what was going on outside. Here she was closed off in this harem. Mordechai tells her, look, this guy's a nut. Look at what he did to his first wife. You don't want to endanger your people. If he knows what people you're from, he gets upset at you. We're all in danger. We see he has it in for the Jews. The last thing we need is that he should do this. You guys know that Clinton, after Monica Lewinsky, went all out after us. If you check the history of what he did before Monica Lewinsky and after Monica Lewinsky. So Mordechai tells Esther, no, she was Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but...
He wasn't so nice to us beforehand either. That's also true. So Mordechai tells Esther, the last thing we need is that the king should know you're a Jew. Who knows what he'll do to us? He's already turned against us. He made us stop the building of the temple. And so Esther keeps it private and no one knows. Remember, they summoned girls from all around the world. So now it was impossible to know where she was from and what language she spoke. And she's speaking the regular Persian like everyone else there. And Mordechai came every day. The Rebbe of Gur says, why did Mordechai merit to be the great savior of the Jewish people? Because he came every day to see how Esther was doing. Very often when we do kindness, so we do it most of the time. We do it often. And sometimes we say, no, things will be okay. I came every other day, so I won't come today. The greatness of Mordechai was that he came every day. And there's a tremendous message in that to all of us. How often do we call our parents? How often do we talk to their bone shalom? There are things which we should be doing every day. Not a big deal. You can't talk to your father. He's going to drive you crazy. Send him an SMS. You know, today we have email. In my days, what? Oh, WhatsApp. Okay. So there are simple solutions to that. And yes, you could shut your phone afterwards, right? If he's going to drive you crazy. So you shut your phone afterwards, but you could send a message. Today you could send an email when they're sleeping, right? 2 o'clock in the morning their time. They could still say, hi, Dad. Long time no speak. Then I'll send back, when can we speak? And you'll say, things are hectic, right? Okay.
Do you know what time it is?
Yes, Benny.
In regards to Esther, you said that she was speaking Persian. How well did she speak it? Because I read something that says that she couldn't read it.
Don't know.
Okay.
Don't know. You see that Ahasuerus used the translator in talking to her until he understood she came of royal blood. Once he understood that she was a descendant of royal blood, he spoke to her directly. It certainly sounds like she understood the language. Oh, whatever the guys want.
What,
yeah.
What was the royal blood?
She was a descendant of King Saul.
Ah.
Don't forget, Ahasuerus did not have royal blood. But that was why he had ears. Like, you want to talk to me, you got to be of royal blood.
I'm saying, why would it make sense for him not to think that she's a Jew if he knows that she's a descendant of King Saul?
No. When she revealed she was a Jew, she also revealed she was a descendant of King Saul.
The whole story of Purim, because she revealed that towards the end.
Right. Throughout the story, he's talking through a translator. Don't ask me how they were intimate. I don't know. It's very possible he had a translator there too. You wouldn't put him beneath him. Yeah.
In verse 2 of chapter 2, it uses the term betulot.
Right.
Which means a virgin, right? Or is it just...
Usually, yes.
She's already married to Mordechai.
Right.
So what... Well,
very good. So let's, if you're asking that question, so let's zoom forward, and it says, "Vayehav haMelech es Esther," in the 17th verse. The king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found more favor by him than all the virgins. Mm. What was the beginning of the pasuk? More than all the women. From there, our sages understood that when he summoned, he didn't care. It wasn't only virgins. If he saw married women, or if his men saw married women that they thought were good looking, they'd take them too. So you're right. That's a good point, but that's what our sages taught us. They weren't that picky. So, Esther is trying to keep track of the days, and Mordechai keeps visiting, and it's Esther's turn to come to the king. Yes?
If Mordechai was coming every day, why would she need a thing with the naming of the servants if he was coming to tell her what day it was?
It's not clear that he got to communicate with her. It says he would walk in front every day and verify how she was doing and what they were doing with her. So it could be they had someone like a servant in between, but that they had to keep things under wraps. Mordechai had a way of verifying, but it doesn't say he would actually be able to talk to her. Could be she'd be by the window and he'd make a signal to her, and there was some other way. It could be there were other family members who would come by and check on their relatives. Right now they've publicized, they now know how the Italian prosecutor was killed by the mob. Right? How do they know? Because two people in jail were talking to one another, and one mobster said to the other, he revealed to him how he had him killed.
What?
Yeah, so they're listening to you. So I've had the good fortune of visiting people in jail. It's a very interesting visit, because you know that they're tapping the whole... you have this little room where you could sit with the prisoner and you could talk to him and how are you and everything, right? But you know that every word you're saying is being listened to. Okay, I guess this mobster either didn't know or didn't care. So now, yesterday, it hit the news. And they now know how the Italian prosecutor was killed. So I'm saying it could be Mordechai could also come, just like we can visit our relatives in jail. You could visit them, but you know you're being listened to, so you have to be very careful what you say.
What language was there being translated to between the king and Esther?
I don't know.
Or is it like an intermediary? Like
it's like an intermediary, right? Exactly. Right.
They wouldn't communicate with her directly.
Right.
So it might not have been a translator.
Correct. Even though it uses the word mitargem, it doesn't have to mean a translator. Right. It could mean an intermediary. Yeah. Yes.
Two things. First is a statement. Perhaps she wanted to wake up the shofar every morning. And that's when the servant came in, was to let her know that it was morning of that day. And Mordechai wouldn't be able to come at that specific time.
Okay.
And the second question I have is, what was her age at this time if she was born?
75.
She was 75.
Yeah. Boom. How beautiful. Right. Okay. That's why I said that medrash. Because you guys said you know all the other stuff. So we got to get the stuff you didn't learn yet. Yes. Yeah.
So God is going to keep a 75-year-old woman like beautiful enough to be alluring to...
She wasn't beautiful. Who said she was beautiful?
Ahasuerus.
Where?
No.
Was it the most beautiful of all?
Really? Or does it say that she had charm? Does it say she was no sechein? Or does it say she was yafa? Look at the verse.
So basically, she was the girl that you get the conversation. He can have all the other women for those other reasons. But he wants the one
that
she's
not considered one of the four most beautiful women of all time.
One step at a time. Lat. Yes.
Can you tell the people who are selecting the women that he wants beautiful women?
Yeah. Right.
So then wouldn't they have selected her because of the beauty?
That's a good point. Yeah, it certainly seems that way.
She had a great personality.
She's my Hebrew.
Okay. Tom, I don't know of a source for the answer to that. Everything I said until now, I think, is based on Midrashim. That last point, I could say my own pshat, but why would I? Let's leave it as a question.
I just have one.
Yes.
You said before that she was married to Mordechai?
Yes.
And she was married to Ahasuerus at the same time?
Right.
Doesn't that break a couple of rules?
Let's ask a stronger question. Shouldn't a person rather give up their life rather than commit adultery?
Okay,
so that's a good question. So as we continue, we will, Be'ezrat Hashem, address that if you guys choose. Yes, Yaakov.
Haman was the slave of Mordechai. Didn't he essentially become like pseudo-Jewish?
Like a released
slave becomes fully Jewish. So he would have had like to keep Shabbat and stuff or something as a...
1 second. How many people want us to address that?
Okay,
so the question was asked. If Haman was Mordechai's slave, didn't he become half Jewish? Give me 30 seconds.